this is Karen from Rochester, New York.
Hi, my name is Kayla, and I am from Stone Mountain, Georgia.
Hi, my name is Caitlin. I am calling from Denver.
I was hit on my bicycle by a car several years ago. Since that time, I have hounded state, town, county officials to make conditions for cyclists and pedestrians on the road better.
My younger brother, Jody, was a victim of pedestrian fatality on Tar Boulevard. I would like to see the installation of adequate sidewalks, streetlights, and I would like to see the installation of adequate signage that is conducive to the traffic flow of particular areas.
I had an accident 7.5 years ago. Someone turned in front of me, and I'm actually headed into my third neurosurgery 1 month from today. I feel like there's just so much distracted driving and impatience on the roads now. And with the pandemic, I think people become so self-directed and honestly selfish. People seem to forget one instance of impatience, no matter how brief, can permanently alter someone's life and the lives of those around them.
When cities shut down at the start of the pandemic, streets were emptier, but they were also more dangerous for drivers, cyclists, and pedestrians. That's according to data from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. There was more speeding, more drinking and driving, and less seatbelt wearing. But that didn't end in 2020. 2021 saw the biggest six-month jump in traffic deaths ever recorded, and the Thanksgiving holiday stretch is consistently the deadliest drunk driving period of the year. After the break, we'll take a look into what's causing the spike in traffic deaths, who does it impact most, and what's being done to stop it. This is the 1A Podcast. I'm Jen White. We'll be back with more after the break. Remember to join future conversations, download our 1A Vox Pop app, and leave us a voicemail.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Grifols. Senior Director of Corporate Affairs Vlasta Hakes explains the science behind the plasma-derived medicines the company produces.
Plasma contains proteins and antibodies. There are people who are missing those antibodies, or they're missing a protein that helps their body function. And what Grifols then does is we collect this plasma and then isolate those proteins and antibodies to produce a medicine.
To learn more about donating plasma and to find a Grifols center near you, visit grifolsplasma.com.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We're talking about the spike in traffic deaths. Joining us from San Francisco is Laura Bliss, a reporter with Bloomberg City Lab. Laura, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's start with 2020. Cities were shutting down at the start of the pandemic. Streets were more empty. What does the data tell us about traffic deaths during the first year of the pandemic?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's logical if you think about it. We all can remember, you know, looking out our windows in those first few months of the pandemic when we were being told to stay at home as much as we possibly could. And seeing the streets just eerily quiet. I mean, I live here in San Francisco, one of the densest cities in the country, and it was rather spooky. And in some ways, you know, that gave rise to sort of a renaissance for cities where they were shutting down streets and, you know, having people, you know, eating out on the sidewalks and being able to walk and play in the road. The flip side to that was that the emptier streets actually allowed drivers to travel more quickly. And so in 2020 through the first half of 2021, we've seen an 11% increase in speeding-related fatalities. So that is a lot more people driving much faster than they previously did. We've also seen, as you noted earlier, a lot more driving under the influence of drugs and alcohol during the pandemic, and a lot more people who are not wearing their seatbelts when they get involved in crashes. And then that's on top of longer-term trends, right? We also know that our vehicles are getting bigger than ever, which is creating less visibility for drivers and maybe a false sense of security. which we know research has shown can lead to more aggressive behavior on the road.
Did we see more pedestrians and cyclists on the road during that first year of the pandemic?
Yeah, cycling absolutely did take off, and walking trips did as well. I mean, it's a little hard to compare apples to oranges because we were commuting so much less. So there were, you know, fewer walking trips to work, fewer cycling trips to work, but there definitely was more activity on the streets during 2020, you know, during the afternoon, let's say, you know, away from the kind of traditional rush hour peaks of the day. I can't say for sure whether that's directly connected, but we did see the pedestrian fatality rate surge by 21% from 2019 to 2020. That was the largest annual increase on record. Sheer numbers, just to give you a sense, that's more than 6,700 pedestrians killed by drivers in 1 year, which is a number we have not seen this century.
So we're not quite through 2021, but how are the numbers shaping up for this year?
Yeah, it's really interesting, and we don't really know the full explanation yet for why this is, since we have seen traffic volumes largely return to normal. But the first 6 months of 2021 saw the largest six-month jump in traffic fatalities on record, up from 18.4% from the same period in 2020. All told, that's more than 20,000 people who died. So, you know, together with the numbers from 2020, this is a really alarming trend line, particularly since traffic deaths have largely been on the decline prior to the pandemic.
And I just want to be really clear, when we talk about these traffic fatalities, we're talking about instances when people die in a car-to-car incident. If there's a car and a pedestrian or a car and a bicyclist, this is all included in that number, correct?
This is all inclusive. That's right. That's right. But when you break it out into specific categories, you really see that, you know, certain types of road users are particularly affected. We mentioned pedestrians earlier. They are, the perhaps most vulnerable, you know, road user group of all, cyclists as well. And then also when we look at when we break this data down by race, we see that people of color are disproportionately affected by traffic violence. Compared to 2019, drivers killed 23% more Black Americans and 11% more Native Americans than they did in 2020, compared to just a 4% increase for White Americans.
Now, Laura, in response to this new data, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg announced the National Roadway Safety Strategy. What is this?
Yeah, so this is a plan by USDOT. They're calling it a first-of-its-kind national strategy for traffic safety with the intent to reduce traffic fatalities. It's set to be released in January. And the idea here is to basically draw input from, you know, all the different sort of types of stakeholders, whether that's, you know, local, state, and federal government, auto industry leaders, traffic safety advocates, engineers, advocacy groups, and really work together to identify actions that can steer vehicles, roads, speed limits, medical care, and people, or drivers, I should say, towards safer outcomes.
Let's bring one more voice into the conversation. Calvin Gladney is the CEO of Smart Growth America. That's a nonprofit that promotes safe and equitable urban development. Calvin, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So when the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration published new data on traffic deaths, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg called it a crisis.
More than 35,000 traffic deaths a year is unacceptable. And the number has spiked to over 38,000 last year. We've seen millions more serious, lasting injuries. And we know this is also an equity issue, with Black and brown pedestrians more likely to die in traffic crashes. We also know that these deaths can be prevented.
That was Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg speaking. And a report from the Governor's Highway Safety Association in June found that Native Americans and Alaskan Natives have the highest pedestrian death rates. Laura, what other groups have had sharp increases during the pandemic specifically?
Yeah, I think the groups that you highlighted are really the key groups to look at. I mean, in addition to pedestrians and cyclists who have been particularly badly affected by the spike in fatalities, the pedestrian fatality rate surged 21% from 2019 to 2020. And again, just to recap those numbers for people of color, 23% more Black Americans died in traffic crashes in 2020, 11% more Native Americans and Alaska Natives. And I mean, there's a number of different reasons for this, you know, why these groups, and I'm speaking about people of color in particular, why they're disproportionately affected by traffic violence. And I think one really important factor is that these communities are less likely to own cars. And so that means you've got more pedestrians and cyclists actually in this group. And so there's kind of your intersection. And we know that where streets are largely designed for the, you know, speedy throughput of lots of vehicles, which is most streets in our country, they're designed to, you know, get the largest number of cars through as quickly as possible. That leads to less safe conditions for people who are walking or people who are on their bikes.
Calvin, yeah. What's the historical context behind this disparity?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's been both racist, race-based, and also class-based disinvestment throughout our history. And that directly leads to more deaths from Black and brown people. And, you know, Laura talked about the recent statistics, but this has been a long-term trend. Our 2021 Dangerous by Design National Report showed that between 2010 and 2019, Black pedestrians were 82% more likely to be hit. And for, using census terms, American Indians, indigenous people, it was 221%. Mm-hmm. So this has been a long-term trend, not just specific to COVID, that Black and brown people are hit more and killed. And the history goes back even to the 1950s highway system, which put highways disproportionately through Black and brown communities. But there's a second piece that doesn't get talked about as much, which Black and brown communities also suffer from faster streets. And Laura mentioned this a little bit, which you can call arterials, which are built for speed. They're built for more than 20 miles per hour, 30 miles per hour, and the like. And so if you take, as Laura said, Black and brown communities have more folks walking, and then they disproportionately have poor pedestrian infrastructure, they have faster streets running through them, you end up with more deaths. And this is something that we know, because if you take National Traffic Safety Board data, and we also talk about this in our report, if a person is hit by a car and that car is going 20 miles per hour, they have a 5% chance of dying. If that car is going 10 miles faster per hour, if it's going 30 miles per hour, their chance of death is 45%. So if you combine Black and brown communities having less pedestrian infrastructure, streets going faster, and more of them walking to public transit and biking and the like, it's just a terrible mix of factors that basically lead to more death.
Calvin, what are the economic benefits of improving cyclist and pedestrian safety?
Oh, there's many, and I'm so glad you asked that question, Jen. And actually, Jen, I believe you're a native Detroiter, so I'll give an example of what you might chuckle people call a Michigan left.
Oh,
do you remember that term?
I drive it every time I go home to visit my mom.
Exactly. And so the headline here is that bad street design and a lack of physical infrastructure for pedestrian and bikers is bad for business. It's bad for business. And we did a study called Foot Traffic Ahead, which just talked about walkable communities and looking at places that were walkable urban places. And the places that had more walkability saw the biggest increases in office and retail under our study. But I actually want to mention a study in New York City, which goes back a little bit of a ways, which showed that when the first protected bike lane was created in New York City, I think it was 8th and 9th Avenue in Manhattan, there was an increase of 49% in terms of retail sales in that corridor. And you can go to a Portland State study that talks specifically about bicycle infrastructure that also talked about positive economic impacts if you have infrastructure that allows people to walk and bike and get to retail. And I mentioned the Michigan left to say, you know, you can be in parts of Detroit and Michigan where you're driving or you're walking and you see a coffee shop across the street or a little clothing store. But you have to go three blocks up and make a left and make a U-turn and come back because there's no crosswalk and there's no place to turn. And so you have to make a Michigan left. And what happens is streets that are built for speed, streets that are designed without crosswalks and for folks to go farther before they can make any turns, that's bad for retail. People just don't stop. Pedestrians don't stop. Bikers who can't park their bike anywhere, they don't stop, and retail suffers. And the opposite is also true. When you put in bicycle infrastructure, when you put in better and wider sidewalks, you make it better for pedestrians and bikers, and that's better for business.
Calvin, is there a city or community that's tried to do what you're describing there, create streets that require drivers to pay more attention?
Oh, absolutely. I think we mentioned Secretary Pete Buttigieg earlier. And in the great city of South Bend, Indiana, we worked on what's called a complete streets project. And that's the idea of building out our streets so that it's made not just for the car or the driver, but for pedestrians, for bikers, for folks that have other forms of mobility, like wheelchairs, assisted devices. And we worked with then mayor at the time to think about how to slow things down. And one of the things we did was a great roundabout, which forces drivers, as opposed to driving down a straight line, they have to slow down and think about what they're doing, which causes them not to be distracted. There's one technical way of doing this, and it's called a chicane, spelled C-H-I-C-A-N-E-S. And all it is basically a curvy road. And you'll see this in a number of places as well, that the curviness of that road causes the driver to focus on driving, not on a cell phone or computer, talking to the person next to them. And so we've seen, and we've worked with cities around the country on building out more completer streets and putting in these very simple and easy to do physical infrastructure changes that actually will help from a street design perspective reduce fatality.
And just really quickly, as I'm coming into work now and there are more cars on the road, there was a period of time when there really wasn't a rush hour as I had experienced it before. But how does that idea of rush hour shape our current transportation policies?
You know, this might sound a little provocative, but the concept of rush hour in some ways now in its execution is racist and classist. Because it presupposes that where we put the most resources, the number of buses, the headways, the time in between when buses show up, the number of staff that are there for customer service and the like, it presupposes that it is most important during, quote, rush hour, which usually is considered 8 to 5 or something to that effect, and then particular portions in the middle of the day, it presupposes that that's when the most people are there. But if you think about frontline workers, if you think about particularly Black and brown community members, they're often working in retail and other types of jobs where they don't travel during rush hour. And so the result is that lack of resources and investment has a negative effect and is inequitable to Black and brown communities.
So very briefly, in just a sentence or two, Calvin, how can we design streets in a way that help make cities more equitable?
Let's design our streets for safety, not speed. You can't do both. Let's overinvest in Black and brown communities that don't have the pedestrian, bicycle, and other infrastructure to keep them safe. And let's change our culture so that it's not okay that 38,000 people can die in a year from vehicle traffic crashes.
That's Calvin Gladney, the CEO of Smart Growth America, a nonprofit that promotes safe and equitable urban development. Calvin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more of our conversation on traffic deaths in just a moment. A reminder to have your questions answered on future topics, or just to let us know what you think, tweet us at 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, BetterHelp, the online counseling service dedicated to connecting you with a licensed counselor to help you overcome whatever stands in the way of your happiness. Fill out a questionnaire and get matched with a professional tailored to your needs. And if you aren't satisfied with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time, free of charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/1A to get 10% off your first month. Get the help you deserve with BetterHelp.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
1A's week of listener picks is coming up, and we'd love your help with this annual tradition of ours. Every January, we take your pitches and we turn them into a week's worth of shows. So you suggest a topic, 1A listeners across the country vote on which topics they want to hear, and then we produce them and bring them to you. So if you have a pitch for us or an idea that's been rolling around in your brain or just something you'd like to hear more about on our airwaves, leave a comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or send us an email at 1A@WAMU.org. We'll collect your pitches through November, put them to a vote in December, and in January, you'll hear them on the air. Let's get back to the increase in traffic deaths among drivers, cyclists, and pedestrians and what we can do about it. Joining us now is Lewis Leff. He's the Transportation Safety Officer for the City of Austin Transportation Department. Lewis, welcome.
Thank you very much, Jen.
And also with us, Jonathan Adkins, Executive Director of the Governor's Highway Safety Association. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Hello, my pleasure.
Jonathan, do you think carpool lanes and truck lanes can help make highways safer?
Certainly, it's one of the factors. We need to do more of everything that we know that works. You know, this is not COVID. We know what to do about traffic deaths, and the solution that you just mentioned is certainly one of the things that should be considered as we go forward.
What other top of mind solutions do you think of?
Yeah, certainly a big one is traffic enforcement. One of the things that's happened the last 2 years, as traffic deaths have greatly increased, there's less traffic enforcement, less law enforcement on the road. Unfortunately, when we defund the police, we're also defunding traffic enforcement. And so we need to look at how do we continue to support traffic enforcement and law enforcement and do it in an equitable and fair way so that when people are speeding, when people are driving drunk, there has to be a consequence for that. We can get to some of that by better infrastructure, and your last speaker spoke to that, but we can't forget about traffic enforcement. We've got to have some way to penalize drivers when they drive dangerously.
I just want to mention, when people talk about defunding the police, it's not often about actually siphoning money away from police completely. It's about resourcing other areas around mental health support and things like that. But that's a conversation for another day. We got this email from Warren, who says, enforcement of speed limits and monitoring of distractive and aggressive driving is a joke. If there are no consequences for poor driver judgment, folks will continue to push the limits. Now, Lewis, Austin is one of more than 40 communities with a Vision Zero plan. That means it's committed to a citywide effort to eliminate traffic deaths and severe injuries. Tell me about Austin's Vision Zero plan. Who's involved and is it working?
Yeah, our Vision Zero plan is to eliminate traffic-related fatalities plus serious injuries. And that's because we see over 500 of those types of crashes each year in Austin. We have been working on this for about 5 or 6 years now, and in the first couple of years really were focused around shared understanding with our partners about this goal and how important it is. You know, at some point we've got to ask ourselves, how did we normalize the death and serious injuries that are happening on our roadways at such a high level? And so for us here in Austin, we work with a variety of partners. That's law enforcement, but also public health professionals, folks at the universities, working with folks, not only engineers in our transportation department here at the city, but with our state partners, to try to get everybody at the table working towards this shared goal of zero traffic-related fatalities and serious injuries. And what we've seen so far is that when you really focus in on the priority locations using really data-informed approaches, you can make a difference. Our serious injury numbers are going down while our fatality numbers are rising, as they are statewide and nationally. And that's with a focus on speed, that's with a focus on engineering as a primary strategy, and wrapping that around with some enforcement on those key behaviors that have been discussed today.
Jonathan, when traffic laws get enforced, are they strong enough?
Laws can certainly be stronger, and they can, it has to be deterrent. It has to be effective, and it doesn't have to be a traditional law enforcement officer. Cameras are very effective tools to get people to slow down. When we have more cameras in neighborhoods and communities, it's safer for everyone on the roads. It's safer for bicyclists. It's safer for pedestrians. Cameras do not see gender. Cameras don't see race. And so that it doesn't have to be the way that we've always done it with traffic enforcement. We've got to think about things more systemically. The Governor's Highway Safety Association conversation points to Austin. I'm thrilled to hear about what Austin is doing, because we've written that up and highlighted that. Austin is really a great example, because you have leadership at all levels in the community that are focused on traffic safety. It can't just be law enforcement. It can't just be engineering. We've got to have that safe system approach. If more communities and states were doing what Austin is doing, we probably wouldn't be in the situation that we're in now.
Laura, when we talk about cameras, and to Jonathan's point, they don't see race or gender, but our earlier conversation, we were talking about how streets in Black and brown neighborhoods tend to be faster. So is this a place where you still have to apply that equity lens so you don't end up with speed cameras all in these neighborhoods where the streets have been designed to be faster anyway?
Yeah, it's a really important question. And this is, I think, probably the biggest debate that has unfolded in the sort of Vision Zero advocacy community over the last 10 years or so, is this idea that, you know, the idea itself, Vision Zero, it actually originated in Sweden, and you know, which is a pretty homogenous country where they don't have the same, or they don't have many of the same kind of disparities when it comes to traffic safety enforcement as we do in the United States. And we know, especially in the last couple of years, we've seen a lot more attention to the fact that, you know, traffic stops, you know, can not only disproportionately impact, you know, Black drivers and other drivers of color, but those kinds of stops can also lead to a different kind of dangerous situation where, you know, those traffic stops can escalate. And we've all seen really, you know, tragic outcomes kind of related to those kinds of situations. And so, and this is not to say that enforcement is not a critical, you know, component of everything we're talking about, but that absolutely, as you say, you know, equity needs to be kind of part of this conversation, and that this does not just lead to, you know, excessive enforcement of communities of color, as we've, you know, seen for decades in this country.
Lewis, speed limits have been a recent focus in Austin. What's changed there and why?
So we decided to really revamp our approach towards speed management, knowing how important it is towards our Vision Zero goals. There's a couple of different parts to our approach. One is around the traffic calming that happens more on the neighborhood-style streets. But the other is really about these major arterials that have been spoken about today by Calvin and Jonathan, and understanding that's where the majority of our severe crashes are really happening. So we studied speeds around our urban core on some of our key arterials, presented our city council a package last June, and they passed it. So we're going to have over 850 miles of streets, both on arterials and neighborhood streets throughout our community, that are going to change speed limits in the coming years. And what we've seen is that is part of the overall safe system approach from successful places that have implemented Vision Zero type of work in the past. And we're starting to see some of those streets really have positive changes as far as the crash outcomes that we're hoping to see. But again, that's just one part of the puzzle. The policy has to be combined with the engineering as the primary strategy. And then the enforcement, you know, what we've seen from places like Oslo, that it's heralded as the largest city to achieve Vision Zero, you know, they have very stringent enforcement penalties and fines, and they don't have that historical context that we do as a nation around the traffic stops that have disproportionately impacted parts of our community, communities of color. So we need to have a very narrowly focused strategy around speeding impairment as the traffic enforcement focus, and doing that at the times and places that we need to have that happen, we'll see the greatest outcome for our safety that we're looking for.
Well, there's also been an effort to change how we talk about traffic safety and collisions. Washington is one state that's put out new traffic safety PSAs in the last year.
Driving safely is all about the little things, like giving folks a break, even at unmarked crosswalks, making plenty of space for people riding, and choosing to wait for the next green light by slowing down and stopping on yellow. Because when you're the biggest and the fastest, you've got to be the safest, too. Together, we get there.
That was a PSA from the Washington Traffic Safety Commission. Jonathan, how are these kinds of messages different than what we've seen in the past?
I love this message, and not just because it's from a GHSA member, because I like the message because it talks about how we have to look out for each other. We see this in society in general, where we're not looking out for our friends and our neighbors. We're only too often self-focused. And that applies to drivers. We've got to look out for pedestrians. We've got to look out for bicyclists. I like the message also because it gets away from that heavy-handed enforcement message. We've talked a lot about enforcement, and that's important, but that's not the only thing that we have to do. And we have to acknowledge that enforcement turns a lot of people off, and understandably, there have been issues. And so this is a little bit softer message. And we know from research that we can impact people's behavior when we talk about them getting home safely to their family. We don't want them to go through that loss. And we've certainly experienced so much loss during COVID that the last thing any of us want to do is lose someone to a traffic crash.
Well, Laura, this hour we've been talking about how crashes are way up, and yet it seems like more people than ever are driving, and presumably not just when they absolutely need to. What do you think needs to change in just how we think as a whole about deaths and serious injuries as a risk of driving to move us beyond this acceptance that this is just part of being on the road?
I think it's a really important question and maybe the hardest one. These are every factor we've identified in this conversation is challenging and sort of deep-rooted in our, literally in our built environment and in our culture. And I think it's true that we've been kind of become sort of inured, to the risk that dangerous driving poses. And we see it how we invest in driving infrastructure more than transit and walking infrastructure. We see it in, how directly tied successes, economic success to automobile ownership. Despite that, moving to different forms of transportation is going to be really important for solving the climate change crisis. And so, I think we need to start looking at this problem with a different lens. Rather than thinking about cars and what's best for cars, we need to be thinking about what's safest for people.
That's Laura Bliss, a reporter with Bloomberg City Lab. We've also been talking to Jonathan Adkins, executive director of the Governor's Highway Safety Association, and Lewis Leff, transportation safety officer with the City of Austin Transportation Department. Laura, Jonathan, Lewis, thanks for speaking with us. Today's producer was Katie Anastas. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A.